Okay, so this is not going to work. I'm going to have to adjust this heavily. I think I might have to flip it and then flip-flop it.
Right. I just to let you know, I do need to leave at about 6 today. Oh, I got to pick up the kids.
I've heard of kids.
That's not a euphemism.
Drop off kids at the pool.
Oh no, they've been at the pool.
Alright, let's see. Well, that's just way worse actually.
Are we gonna do a standing? That place across the street called Worm House.
Yoronotaki? Yoronotaki is fucking...
Creative Studio Worm House.
Whatever the fuck it is, yeah, something like that. Yoronotaki, though, they've been there for like fucking 50 years? No, more than 50 years. That particular... So it's a chain. And they've been around... Yeah, the Yoronotaki, the red sign. They've been around since 1950 fucking four.
What do they sell?
Drugs. No, so they sell, like, that's all izakaya stuff, hamkatsu, etc., etc. Yeah. Anyways, well, let's catch up first. What's new?
Have we started?
I mean, theoretically, we're always starting. But what is new with you, though?
The last time I was here in Oyamadai would have been your anniversary event.
Yeah.
And I think that is the last time we hung out.
That was a blast.
As well.
Wait, the anniversary event or the appreciation party?
Appreciation party?
Yeah, the appreciation party was invite only.
Right, yes. I was at the appreciation party. Thank you for your appreciation.
Well, thanks for putting me on blast now, and everybody who didn't come, they're like, what a fucking dick. I didn't get an invite to that. We invited quite a few people, and we gave away a lot of beer.
Mm-hmm.
And my
That's why I was here.
Extremely upset with me with the amount of beer that we gave out. But you only get your first anniversary once. However, she's like, we do want to make it to our second anniversary. And I was like, that's a fair point.
Mm.
You know, after year one, though, we learned a lot of lessons. Don't have an appreciation party.
Don't give away free beer.
Don't give away free beer. Turns out that's not great for the bottom line. No, actually, we had a blast. We factored that into our budget for the month. We knew exactly how much we could give away and still, like, you know, pay our fucking salaries and shit like that because, you know, year one is not easy, you know?
Absolutely. And most small businesses fail within their first 18 months. I think it's usually the one-year anniversary appreciation party that puts them over the edge.
They're like, God damn it, we were doing so good. We just started breaking even, and now we're fucked.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that we've done is we actually considered doing this pop-up within the shop. We are going to do, like, the sandwich idea. I love sandwiches. And
who doesn't love sandwiches? Show me a man who doesn't love sandwiches, and I'll show you a man who's tired of life.
I'll show you a Martian.
Okay.
So we had these ideas. We had these, like, fucking, you know, grand fucking recipes. And, I mean, the whole thing was just really sweet. However, it involved a different name, a different logo, and opening up on days that were closed to kind of use that as to separate ourselves and kind of...
Right.
You know, reinvent ourselves, so to speak. And then if it went well, we were going to hire somebody full-time to take those 2 days that were normally off.
Right. The pop-up in the shop.
The pop-up in the shop.
The shop-up.
The shop-up. And then we realized, like, that's idiotic. Like, it's way too early to dilute our brand. And the cost of these sandwiches was pretty prohibitive. This neighborhood, I think, does well financially. So it would have been okay. We've got a sandwich shop right across the street that is... charging roughly what we would have charged for some things. To be honest, our prices were a little bit higher, but our sandwiches were quite a bit larger.
I mean, I'm a man who loves a sandwich, yeah. So I'm curious to know more about what you would have been putting in these sandwiches. Maybe we can enjoy them through the medium of ears.
Fuck this, I've got pictures. And for you folks at home, this should work out really well. So here's like, you know, an Italian sub that I was doing.
Yeah, I'm looking at a sandwich, picture of a sandwich here.
It's got roughly about 250 grams of meat and 100 grams of cheese. So it had provolone, fresh mozzarella, salami, ham, pesto, all the fixings, salt, pepper, oil, vinegar, the shebang, right?
Maybe. It's an Italian deli sandwich.
It's an Italian deli sandwich, which here an Italian deli sandwich is, well, A, hard to find, and B, usually disappointing.
I've got to ask, though, like, where are you getting all of those ingredients? Where are you getting provolone and all those different kinds of meat?
Provolone comes from a little Italian grandma, Grandma Costco, and the meats come from our supplier.
Right.
So we've got a supplier who does, like, roast ham and salami at really, like, fair prices. Not inexpensive, but that's why the sandwiches were not inexpensive.
Inexpensive for Japan.
Inexpensive for Japan.
Right. You're not going to Isetan for those kind of ingredients,
correct,
right?
Correct. And so what we ended up doing is we ended up kind of settling on, too early to dilute the brand because we don't have a brand yet. We're building this brand. We're really trying to, get comfortable in our neighborhood first. And, of course, we love new customers when they come, but it's not the priority. The priority is we're a local shop. So the Wednesdays, Thursday people, we need those people here.
Mm.
And so we really are focusing on that. What we've done is we decided to open up one extra day. So we're open 6 days a week. And we do tortas, which is a Mexican sandwich, basically. But the torta that we built has, this is new. I haven't seen this in a while. What is this? What are those things called again?
Hoverboard.
Hoverboards, that's right. It's been a while. Back to the future. So it has black beans on the base on these custom rolls that we have. And then on top of that, we put our chicken tinga. Then we do pickled onions, we do fresh avocado, we do a chipotle mayonnaise, and the thing just is really nice.
Are these coming out soon? Or
they came out yesterday.
Right.
So Tuesdays, so Torta Tuesdays are the thing now. We don't do tacos, so I'm sure there'll be plenty of disappointed people.
Taco Wednesdays.
Exactly. Once they catch on that tortas are only available on Tuesdays, then hopefully it'll go well. But enough about me. You're here. You're visiting us.
I am, yes.
You are here on our podcast, my podcast. Thank you so much for coming out.
Beer friends forever.
Beer friends for fucking ever. That's in our logo. Welcome to Beer Friends Forever.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm happy you're here. We're filming from beautiful Oyamadai, Setagaya.
We're filming this? Oh, no. I probably should put a shirt on in that case.
Well, yeah, just the... pants would be nice, dude.
don't cramp my style. I am not putting pants on for this recording.
This is a professional atmosphere.
No, I refuse.
Also, we've got large windows and older neighbors, so...
I
was going to say old neighbors, but I feel like I'm older, so maybe just older.
With calves like these, pants would be a crime.
Well,
or as I would call them, trousers.
That was what to say, though. You know, pantsu does have a different meaning here, so yes. Et cetera. So I don't know if you've ever heard the podcast.
I have, yes.
Oh, well, thank you for that. You're the one. So our podcast format is very simple.
Okay.
We're going to do a quick fire portion, which always goes awry.
Yes, it's very quick fire. I've noticed that.
It is so quick. It's about half the podcast.
Yeah.
Then we go into our deeper Q&A section. But as always, we start with some self-introduction. So
yep.
If you don't mind, who are you?
Yeah, I ask myself that same question on an almost daily basis during my affirmations. My name is Matthew Boynton, and I am one half of the founding team of Sakamichi Brewing.
Excellent.
I'm originally from Birmingham in the UK.
Nice.
As you can probably tell by my complete lack of accent.
Well,
I don't have an accent. This is just what normal people sound like.
The way you pronounce it, too, I would say Birmingham.
Birmingham.
But yours sounds much more accurate.
Sounds a little bit. Yeah. And what else do you want to know? I've been in Japan for about 15, 16 years.
Solid.
Now. So oh, yeah. Quite a long time. I've lived in Japan longer than I've lived in any other country.
Really?
Yep.
Wait a minute. So does that mean you've moved here when you were... What? Hold on.
So I...
Do math for me.
I'm from England.
Uh-huh.
But we moved to Scotland when I was about 10.
I see.
And then when I was 23, yeah. I think I left Scotland. I moved to South Korea. I was there for a year and a bit.
What?
And
really?
I've been in Japan ever since.
Wow. Okay.
So I've lived here longer than I lived in any other single country.
Scotland seems like, not like a logical jump, but a closer move than South Korea.
Mm.
So, sorry, Scottish people. We're going to skip Scotland and tell me about your move to South Korea.
Yeah, we're going to do the full David Starkey there. Scotland and irrelevance. No, I finished university and I was looking to leave the UK to try something a bit different.
Yeah.
And took the very classic route of English teaching.
Excellent.
And this was when 2005.
Yeah. I've
so heard of that. It was a while ago.
I heard of that year.
Or thereabouts. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of fairly early internet days. You couldn't just apply for jobs online back then.
Did you get mail and stuff during that time?
I used something called Dave's ESL Cafe. I don't know if that website still exists.
Not familiar with
but part of what was on there was kind of job boards where different companies would advertise positions. There were quite a lot in China, actually, in Shenzhen in China.
Yeah, well, it's a big population,
Applied for a few of those jobs and they were all very much like, great, get on the first plane. We'll sort things out when you get here.
That seemed super nervous.
A little sketchy to me. Don't worry about a visa. Just get on the plane. We'll figure it out when you get here.
Just bring the warm body.
But really the first non-sketchy job offer that I got was in South Korea. And so I thought, why not? Let's give it a go.
Yeah. And you were there for a while?
About a year. Year and a month, I would say.
And then you're like, I'm going to Japan?
That's right. Yeah.
Excellent.
Right across, hop over the Sea of Japan. Let's try Japan instead.
You made the right choice, I think, you know. Although South Korea does have a pretty nice burgeoning craft beer scene, right?
It does, yeah. It's up and coming. When I was living there, it was all just Cass and Height, which, with all the best wine in the world, are terrible beers.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
I'm going to say it out loud. Well, I believe Cass is owned by AB InBev, so I hope they aren't a sponsor of this podcast. Funny not thing, anymore.
Funny thing is, we've recently been bought. No, we are not Stone. And it makes me so sad that Stone is now a Sapporo subsidiary.
Mm.
But we'll move on from that. All good vibes now. All good vibes. So I have a few questions for you. You know, we've got the quick fire portion of the challenge. And you do a few things. I mean, obviously, brewer, owner, Renaissance man.
Correct.
Nude portrait painter.
Correct. No, I'm going to have to correct you there. Nude portrait model. I have no artistic talent of my own.
I got it. Paint me like one of your girls, Jack, type of thing.
Exactly.
Okay, got it. You also do podcasting, obviously. In fact, my first experience with podcasts was on your podcast.
Correct. Although the podcast that we make, Sakamichi Nights, is currently on indefinite hiatus.
Indefinite hiatus.
It will be back at some point.
Got it. Okay.
But things...
It's hard.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on this summer. Events and brewing and so on. So we just have...
To find time.
Yes.
To edit, probably a little bit easier. Like, I think you're a pro at that. I think you edit, like, same night, right?
Yeah, so the format was usually we would invite somebody that we found interesting to come in, or somebody like you on occasion, to come in and be on the podcast. We would drink some beer from... our fridge or from our tap board, and then we just talk about it a little bit.
Beautiful.
About an hour of conversation, and then I would sit down and edit it. So the guests are usually still at the bar at that point, and I sit
still
down, put some headphones on, and completely ignore them.
Still getting shrammered.
Yes.
Before Daniel comes in.
Absolutely.
He's the straight man. Well, no, that's not. I'm still talking.
He's the schmoozer.
The schmoozer. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yep.
So let's get back to my quick fire, which clearly... goes terribly.
This is going really quickly.
It's extremely fast. I'm going to ask you questions from your two different areas because I was inspired by you guys to actually do the podcast that I've been planning for such a long time. That's happened. Every single podcast that I've done
adds a certain amount of veracity.
We're a fucking working bar, right? We fucking prove it. It'd be goddamn. I'm gonna edit all that shit up. So, what the hell was I saying? Yeah. So I was inspired by you and Daniel to actually get up off my ass and do the podcast that I've been wanting to do pretty much since we opened. And I never did shit with it. Like, the idea of it, it was such like a cool abstract thing. And I was like, yeah, someday, you know, we'll get it off my ass and do it. And then you guys asked me to come on the podcast after Kiff was on the podcast.
Right.
Right. So I was excited. I brought Mike with me, et cetera. And we had a really good time. And I was like, okay, well, shit, you know, like, I need to carve out a little bit of time to do something. I enjoy talking to people. And for me, this podcast is such a great opportunity to just bullshit with somebody and get to know them better, right? And that's the point of Beer Friends Forever. Like, we've hung out a few times. We've brewed a collaboration beer. You know, you came to the party. We've been at other events, et cetera, Devilcraft. But I don't know that much about your background. You know, so I'm going to ask you a lot about, you know, just kind of like your childhood and if you feel validated as an adult now and things
Should I be lying down on a couch for this?
I mean, let's keep drinking and we'll see. You know, I'll get you on the floor one way or another. But let's start with just a couple simple things for the quick fire. From a podcasting perspective, how do you prepare for a podcast interview?
That's a good question. I try and research as much about the person who's coming on as I can. Sometimes that's easier than other times. Like, some people have more of a public presence than others.
Yeah.
If they do have anything in the public eye, it's a good idea to just have a look through it.
Yeah, sure.
You know, look at their Instagram, read their Twitter. If they've ever written a blog, have a quick read through that, you know. Find out as much about them as you can before you get them in.
That makes sense. This is what the kids call cyberstalking. Is that correct?
Yeah, just light cyberstalking. I might leave a few abusive comments on their MySpace page, you know.
Beautiful. By the way, has Tom added you back as a friend?
Tom and I have never stopped being friends.
Oh, excellent. I'm so glad.
We're still pretty tight.
Very cool.
But then I try and think, what questions can I ask them that they might not have been asked before and that in the best way in the world are going to make them a little bit uncomfortable, where they go, oh, actually, that's an interesting question. I hadn't thought about that before.
That makes sense. So now I remember our podcast. I think you edited that part out, but you're like, show me on the doll, where they, well, whatever. I do remember.
Show me on the baby Yoda.
It's true. Okay, well, thank you for sharing that. That's actually really interesting to me. One really quick thing about podcasting before I move to brewing, because I do want to know some things about brewing. Do you have a favorite episode or topic that you covered in the, 100 podcasts that you did, 100 episodes or so?
We've done over 100 episodes now.
Over 100, so 101.
I'm not sure, actually. It's probably more like 102 or 103. It's slightly over 100 episodes. For our 100th episode spectacular, we plan to invite on our two guestingest guests, which are Mac of Maction Planet.
Oh, okay.
And Tyler of the Planet Chaos.
Got it.
And we were going to do a head-to-head quiz between them, a trivia quiz about the podcast, about Sakamichi Nights.
Oh, that sounds... Did it go well?
Well, on the day, Tyler cancelled and didn't show up. So,
wait,
Dan,
did he ghost you or just cancel?
He said that he had some kind of terrible stomach bug. I don't put it past Mac to have poisoned him. I think that's entirely something that could have happened. And he was expecting that we would just call it a wash, cancel the quiz, declare him the winner. But we weren't going to do that. And actually, Dan sat in for Tyler to take part in the quiz. I'd like to point out that Dan has been on almost every single episode of this podcast.
Don't tell me he lost.
And he still lost. He lost the trivia quiz.
Front.
Yes, it was. It was brilliant.
That's and that is a phone ringing on our day off. Well, actually, it's Wednesday. Technically, we're usually open on Wednesdays. I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure we updated our Google hours.
Great. Well, people are going to start arriving any moment now.
Well, let's just go ahead and, while I'm asking you the next question, update our Google hours. What's your favorite beer style to brew? And please, take your time.
Okay, that's a good question.
First of all, do you have one, realistically?
Not really, no.
Okay.
Of course, drinking, I have preferred styles and things that I enjoy drinking. But as for brewing, it's always a fun challenge to try something new or unusual, something you haven't tried before. Try and use a new ingredient, try and do a new beer style, you know, to challenge and push yourself a little bit as a brewer? Is it the same in the kitchen? Do you like finding new ingredients and experimenting with them?
I do, man. I mean, on my, so the weekly special that we do is my chance to play.
Right.
You know, and do some weird and fun things. So, for example, last week our weekly special was a bulgogi taco. And I like Korean barbecue. I'm not well versed in Korean barbecue in Japan. I haven't gone to a lot of Korean barbecue, but I have spent some time in my hometown in San Diego at Korean places, and in Koreatown in LA. And so that's a little bit more my speed. Maybe it's not necessarily super traditional or whatever. And I'm not a purist when it comes to tacos. So if it fucking tastes good and it's got a lot of flavor, I'm going to throw that in a tortilla and I'm going to serve it up for you.
Absolutely.
So we did that for the bulgogi tacos, and that had about 7 to 8 components. Not the funnest thing to prepare constantly, but that's why it's a weekly, right? Those tend to have quite a bit more labor and quite a bit more components, but that is my challenging part, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm sure as a brewer, you have the same.
Yeah, and I guess I don't know whether it's possible to kind of batch all of that out or if you have to do it individually each time. But for us as brewers, when we're trying something new, it's 1 day of work. Mm. You plan it, you do the research, you acquire the ingredients, but then preparing the beer, the brew day, is 1 day, basically. And then when it's done, it's done.
No, it's a daily thing during that week. However, though, I've been to your brew days, and for anybody who's looking to do a collaboration with Sakamichi, I highly recommend it. They make excellent beer. It's not as fun as you expect, though. There's a lot more work involved than any other collaboration.
You will have to work for your supper.
You actually are working and sweating in the brewery, which, to be honest, it made the beer taste better.
It's our labor that creates value.
That is true.
And creates deliciousness.
That is true. And so when they say collaboration beer, you are absolutely collaborating. You're fucking milling grain. You're shoveling out fucking grist, etc. But it was a really great beer. We really, really enjoyed what you guys did for us and did with us with Midnight Surfer.
Midnight Surfer, yeah.
For our 1 year anniversary. And I can tell you it was one of the faves. So
great. Well, thank you very much. Yeah, it was a fun style. That was a hoppy pseudo pills.
Yes.
With some nice kind of sunny Azaka hops.
Yes, the Azaka hops actually went really, really well with it.
Pretty delicious.
I don't know how to adjust my hours on Google. We're a very professional operation here. Yep. So I'm just going to move on to the third quick fire question, I think.
These are going really quickly.
These are extremely, what are we about? 30 minutes in?
Something like that, yeah.
Quick fire. Let's keep going. Three.
Let's keep the pace up.
Board games. Do you like them?
Yes.
What's your favorite?
Ooh. Board games. Does it count if there isn't a board, but there are cards?
Sure.
I really like a game called Skull. You ever played Skull?
I've never heard of Skull.
So you each have, it's a game for 3 or more players. You each have 4 cards,
yeah.
3 of which are flowers, 1 of which is a skull.
Okay.
You take it in turns to play cards face down.
Yeah.
And then at some point, somebody will start bidding. Like, they'll say 4.
Right.
And that's how many cards they think they can turn over without turning over a skull.
I gotcha. You know.
And then the next person can either raise or they can fold.
I'll tell you, I think we've heard enough about the rules of Skull.
Yep.
But it does sound like a potentially fun game.
It's great.
It's less fun when you have to explain it. It's like the joke, right? It's like when you're about to start playing like a new game, and you're like, let me go over the rules. And you're like, fuck, let's just play.
Let's play a practice hand.
And then we'll figure it out, right? But
it's a fun game because it's all about deceiving people.
Well, I do like that, though.
Yeah.
That does sound... So is this like a Cards Against Humanity thing where it's like a pack that's all set up for that?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay, cool. Okay, good to know.
I guess you could play it with regular playing cards if you wanted to.
Interesting.
But it wouldn't be as fun.
Skull.
Yeah.
I've wanted to play Exploding Kittens.
Yep.
I've never played that one before.
We have that one at the bar next time
you're
over.
Really?
You should come play it.
Excellent. Are you saying that I don't go to the bar enough?
Cockroach Poker. You ever played Cockroach Poker?
I feel like you're just making shit up at this point.
That's a good one. Okay. Similarly about deceiving people. Right. I won't explain the rules, but yeah.
So basically, you guys are a bunch of shifty characters over at Sakamichi.
I mean, all the best games are about lying to your friends.
That's true. Balderdash. I used to love Balderdash. Yeah, that's true. All right. Let's go with our last quick fire. I don't even know if it's been five. How do you handle a brew mishap?
We say that we meant to do it all along.
Beautiful. This was because in San Diego, like, there was a fucking period of time where, and I'm going to fucking name names. I don't give a shit. First of all, Council Brewing, who I was a big fan of when they were doing their, like, kettle sours, put out Pirate's Booty. And okay. It was a stout. And it got infected because, fuck, they were a small place and they did a lot of fucking kettle sours. And they're like, well, you know, you have a choice. You can return Pirate's Booty or you can keep it and have, like, a funky stout, you know? And then Stone did the same thing with Chocobesa, got infected. And they called it, like, Loco Vesa.
Okay.
They're like, it's crazy, you know? Like, yeah, it's crazy if you fucking keep the bottle, you idiots, but...
You don't want that to explode on your shelf or in your
correct.
Fridge.
Correct. I mean, it was... And they'd said, they're like, by this date, drink it, or you will get shards in your eyes. Blind. So we're good. Yeah, so how do you handle that?
We've never had anything that extreme. We don't do any kettle sours.
That's fair.
And I have to say, if the beer... did get infected, I think you just dump it, right?
Oh, good for you.
Just man. Dump the beer. Like,
it's
that,
hard,
that's
though. It's hard, right?
Right, but that's an actual safety issue, right? You can't be releasing something that might explode
sour
in people's
stout,
houses.
Pirate's Booty is not coming out from Sakamichi anytime soon, then?
Well, if we intended to make a sour stout, okay. Then that would be fine because we would do it in a safe way. Right. But... you know, sometimes you don't quite get the extract that you think you were going to get.
Yeah.
So what was going to be an IPA might turn into a session IPA.
Okay, sure.
Sometimes things might come out a bit stronger than you thought they were going to come out. So what was going to be a session IPA is now an IPA.
Or maybe a double.
An imperial pale ale rather than just a pale ale.
Right.
So to a certain extent, you can work with stuff like that. And usually the earlier in the process that it happens, the easier it is to adjust.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right, if you get a lot more sugar in the kettle than you thought you were going to get at the end of the boil, you can just add more water. Right, you can adjust for that, and you can dilute that beer down, that wort down to where you want it to be before you add the yeast.
Well, this is where your skills come in, right? It's like, how do I take this and make this a product that makes me happy based on this, that, or the other?
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of have a similar thing here sometimes in the kitchen. Kyoko is my wife. Is a harsh critic. So if a special rolls out and it's not ready for prime time, she's the first one to be like, oh, I kind of hate, I'm never nervous about cooking for anybody. People come in here whose kitchens I highly respect. I know my skill set and I know that there is a limitation to my abilities based on the time that I've been cooking. So I'm very proud to put out whatever I do put out and I stand behind it. However, when I cook for my wife, the fucking thing I hate the most, and like I'm on pins and needles, when she takes a bite and she's like, and I have no fucking idea if it's good or bad. And she's like, maybe. And I'm like, fuck, here we go. She's the one that like really makes me nervous about like the food. So I'm basically, if you ever come by and have a weekly special, it's generally Kyoko approved first before it even fucking hits the shelves. So.
You should start putting that on the label.
Kyoko approved?
Absolutely.
I may consider that. All right, man. So let's get into the real questions.
Okay. I'm looking forward to this.
They're probably much faster. So a couple things about brewing that I really wanted to know. You've recently had some interesting beers that are a little bit closer to sour types.
Berliner Weisses.
I know obviously summer lends itself to those styles. The Mango Dialectic, which... you know, I'm ashamed that I haven't been able to try it yet, but I want to be surprised like everybody else. So that keg is coming on very soon, and that beer looked phenomenal. I've actually heard feedback from somebody who's had it, and they were big fans of it. They rated it quite highly on Untappd. But there's been a couple other things, too, that you've done. So talk to me about, like, unique ingredients that you use over the summer to make these kind of bright, fruity beers.
We've used a few different things. So the dialectic series that you're talking about is a series of Berliner Weisses, which is like a lightly soured wheat beer.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain dialectic first for the people at home? Not myself, I know.
Sure. A dialectic is two ideas contained within one idea that contradict each other,
yeah,
and therefore create a new synthesis.
I mean, obviously.
I'm just voicing the thoughts of the room here, I know. Right, right. But our idea is that the sourness of the beer and the sweetness of the fruit contradict each other,
right,
but create a new whole, which is the dialectic series.
A new whole.
Absolutely. And
first,
I also, please, let's get this podcast out of the gutter. I can see you trying to drag me down, but I refuse. I refuse to be dragged down to your level.
Birmingham won't have it, y'all.
I also like encouraging our customers to Google dialectical materialism.
Ah, I see. You know, some people work. We don't fucking have time for that. Tell us what the fuck the beer means. Okay. Yeah, so then I'm excited to try that, but I know that summer lends itself to those kinds of beers. You guys seem to kind of dab on a lot of different styles. You know, you did the milk stout,
yep,
during summer, which is not really like a milk stout season, but it's definitely something that you like to do is mix things up, right?
Yeah, we like to have a pretty varied tap board, you know. Obviously the most popular thing that we sell is hazy IPAs.
Sure.
It's where the market is.
Everybody,
so
right,
we always have to have a hazy IPA on tap, but
right,
not everybody likes them.
Yeah.
So I want to have something sour on tap. I want to have something dark on tap. I want to have something bitter,
excellent,
something light, something lagery, something wheaty.
Yeah.
Like we think
something
of it in
borrowed,
terms
something blue.
Exactly. We think of it in terms of like slots that we want to fill.
Okay.
And during the summer or the hotter months, it is difficult to find dark beers to fill that slot. So why do we just make it ourselves? And that's why we made the Mr. Bones Milk Stout, which is, it's got lactose in it, but not a lot. So it tastes kind of like a delicious iced coffee on a hot summer's morning.
I think that makes a lot of sense, you know. And I think, you know, we've definitely had customers that come in and they're like, you know, granted, like, because we're a neighborhood bar, not everybody is, like, well-versed in styles, etc., but we have people come in, like, they have, you know, do you have Kudo beer? Do you have black beer? Right? And we generally don't during summer, you know?
Right.
It's not that we stay away from it, but the selection for dark beers during summer is pretty small.
Yeah, it's difficult to find.
It's difficult to find in the first place. So when it's that you guys made that, I was surprised and then also kind of pleasantly surprised because you guys are just making styles that you want, and you don't necessarily like a slave to the seasons,
right,
or what people think you should be brewing at that time. And, you know, that freedom, I'm sure, is really great for you.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of seasonality to it, I think.
Sure.
And we have to balance making stuff that we want to drink with stuff that will sell. We are a business, after all. So in a month where we make a dark beer, we will, of course, also make a hazy IPA,
right,
or a hazy pale ale
or
something
two,
like that. Or even two, you know. We'll probably make 3 to 4 beers a month. Maybe one is going to be something a little bit more esoteric, and the other 2 or 3 are going to be something that is more suited to the market at that time.
I see.
Something that's going to sell.
Yeah. So I'm going to pause this for a moment while I transition to another question, more importantly, beer. Actually, I'm not going to pause this. I'm just going to let it roll. I need a brewski or two-ski. Are you good? Do you want to... I'm going to open a can. I can get you another glass. We can do like a... Do you want to do like a faction pills or something?
Yeah, man. That sounds good.
Have you had that yet?
I've had some of that beers, but I haven't had that one.
Not the pills? Okay, well, let's do that then. I don't even know what this is, but it said... Oh, you know what this is? It's a bunch of fucking peppers and shit.
He said it was for the freezer, right?
Right, right.
Days all versus day tall.
Right? Like, yes, yeah, sorry, let me crack this bitch open and toss it in there because this part's stepping in. Peppers for the party. We're at like a very critical time for peppers.
my house.
What's that?
I grow chilies at my house.
Do you really?
As well, yeah.
Nice. What are you growing?
All kinds of things this year.
Okay.
I did some Rocato for the first time, which is like a South American variety.
Oh, interesting.
They're quite nice, actually. Some purple pumpkins.
Ooh.
Which we ended up putting in a beer.
Beautiful.
Can't really talk about that, though. That wasn't on the recipe sheet, so I'm not allowed to.
Really? Is that a little secret edition? Okay. So we've got another beer here now. We got Faction Pills from Alameda, California. I'm a big fan of Faction. I'm glad that we're carrying them in Japan now, and it's pretty readily available. We are called Beer Friends Forever, but we don't actually pontificate too much on beer. You know, we might mention what we're drinking, etc., but the goal is to try to get you to drink and double fist and just get you like a tiny little buzz.
Mm.
So while we're talking, things just flow.
Should I drink both of them at the same time? You want to say that trick?
I mean, if you want a cuvée, hey man, you know, I'm not here to judge you. Speaking of cuvée, our friends down the street, Kuhumbutsu, next station over at Cafe Maison de Quai, have this kind of Cantillon Swansea Day kind of homage thing, because they canceled it this year. And they've got Sang Bleu, which I believe is how the French pronounce it.
Yep.
I'm an aristocrat. Was amazing with fucking berries and the whole nine. They've also got, Cuvée Sang Kios as well, like bottles of that. But excellent, man. If you have time or a chance to go, they're going through the end of the month. And I believe they're going to put something new on tap next week. So just FYI. Okay. Matthew.
Yes.
It's Matthew, right?
That is correct.
Matthew, can you recommend a beer for someone new to craft beer? We have a lot of customers who are new to craft beer. They come in for the tacos. They stay for me. But they also stay for the beer.
Mm.
So if you were to say, hey, I've got a friend that wants to get into craft beer, they don't know what to drink, what would you recommend?
I would recommend that they try one of everything on the menu. And I'm not actually kidding when I say that.
Okay.
Try it, because I think we can make a lot of assumptions about people who are not into craft beer. Like, okay, well, you're definitely going to want something that's easy to drink.
Right.
You're definitely going to want a lager then in that case.
Right.
And in my experience, those assumptions are usually mistaken. Mm. Like, you could give somebody who's not that into beer quite a few different things to try, and the thing that really might take them is the barrel-aged imperial stout.
Sure.
Or the mixed culture fermented, you know, oak-aged sour.
Yeah.
That might be what tickles their goat.
Absolutely.
You know? And so just try a bunch of things and find out what you like, and there will be more of that. I guarantee that.
Excellent. Thank you for not answering the question, but giving us a better answer.
Well, I reframed the question to one that I wanted to answer. I don't think That's I did. Better. No, I did answer that question. I answered that question.
No, but I think you're right. I think that in general, we do see beer tenders. When somebody's new to craft beer, they're like, try this hazy, try this lager, you know, try this Nomiyasui beer, this easy drinking beer, to try to get you. We occasionally will do small tasters, very small tasters, because we are a small bar, but I think it sucks if you spend $1,300 on a beer and you don't like it.
Right.
You know, that's not good for you or them, and maybe they're only having one. Maybe it's their first experience with craft beer. And it's hard to manage, right? You can't give away just a bunch of tasters, but at the same time, you want to have a conversation with folks. And I love bars that do that.
Yeah, and you want to create new fans as well, right? Somebody comes in, they're like, I don't know what to order. They try something on your recommendation and they hate it.
Yeah.
That's probably it for that person. Yeah. They're not coming back and they're not trying any more craft beer.
Right.
But if they find the thing they like, then the upfront cost of letting them try a bunch of little things might be higher, but the long tail of their spending will definitely make it worthwhile.
That's a bit like a pusher, right? First one's free, and then after that, they just keep
it
going back.
It is exactly like that, yes. Okay. You're going back to a previous career of mine there, but I don't like to talk about those days anymore. You said we were going to skip over the whole Scotland chapter.
Was this with Remy and the boys or whatever his name is from Trainspotting? Well, whatever. We don't
Remy the rat from Ratatouille. Yes. That's, right, that's pretty much what he was doing.
When you were a French cook.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Okay. So you've traveled around a bit. You've been in Japan for a long time, you said. Craft brewing in Japan it's a pretty exciting time.
I'd agree with that. Yeah.
There's a lot of things going on and information getting shared, and we are super connected. But I do think that it's still tough to stay maybe connected and updated on brewing trends.
Mm.
How do you do that?
That's a good question. I think it is possible to get too worried about chasing the latest trends. Do you remember Brut IPAs?
I do.
They came and went pretty quickly, didn't they?
They did.
Turns out, not very nice. Right? I don't actually care for that style at all. So I think some places are always trying to be on the very cutting edge of new styles and making imperial sour smoothie ales. But is that really what I want to drink? That's kind of the bigger question that I want to answer.
What do you want to drink?
I don't think your question is completely without merit, though. I'm going to keep talking here as if Renee is still sitting opposite me. I would like to point out he has actually left the room. I'm assuming I've taken control of the podcast now. Look at me. I am the podcast captain now. So, empty chair. I don't think your question is completely without merit, and I think, in fact, there are lots of industry publications that you can read. There are message boards for brewers. There's the Craft Beer and Brewing industry publication, which is a pretty good resource for what's new, what's happening, what new styles are developing, and are they ones that we should keep an eye on or not. So it's good to stay in touch with the industry, but it's also, I don't think it's good to always be chasing, you know, whatever the newest, hippest style is, because
that's true. Yeah.
You've got to develop your own, you know, your own philosophy and your own way of making beer. That's more important, I think.
I mean, I think there's a lot of merit in what you said as far as getting caught up in what everybody else is doing and the keeping up with the Joneses thing, etc. You know, I make tacos. And right now, tacos are having like a moment in Tokyo. And I'm really happy about that. But it also means that people are experiencing tacos more than they did before. Mm. And they're forming their opinions like, well, this is a taco, or this is a taco. And there is a lot of variety within that. I think that because of that trend, maybe people are getting information about, you know, even taco styles, right? Or cooking styles that are maybe not necessarily the norm, and that's the expectation now. So it's a good opportunity, I think, when people come into your place, your brewery, my shop, and get to experience something else. You know, your philosophy on brewing may not fall in line with like a Japanese philosophy because you have a lot of different backgrounds, but you worked in Japan as a brewer prior to Sakamichi.
That's right, yeah. I worked at a couple of different breweries. I apprenticed at Baird Brewing down in Shizuoka. Mm-hmm. I was there for about a year and a half. And then I worked at another place called Ishikawa Shuzo, which is actually a sake brewery, but they also make beer.
Oh, really?
And that one's up here in Tokyo.
Interesting. I did not know that. I knew about the Baird experience, but I didn't know about the other one. Wait, so was that your first experience, or was your first experience with Baird?
My first experience was with Baird. Like, I went in there basically completely cold. I went in there as an apprentice, and then after 3-4 months, I got promoted to assistant brewer, and then at Ishikawa Shuzo, I was promoted, I guess, to brewer.
Yeah.
And now I am the head brewer at Sakamichi.
You've done good, kid.
I've moved up the ladder.
You've done good.
You just got to keep causing those car accidents for the people above you.
So... So you have a partner.
Yes.
Right, in Daniel. And Daniel's a great guy, like you said. He's definitely like a schmoozer. Helps out, you know, on that side while you're kind of handling the beer stuff, etc. But, you know, you guys, I think, work really well together. And Daniel's obviously passionate about brewing, too. How helpful is he on brew days?
He's pretty helpful, yeah. I would say. It would certainly be a lot more difficult if he wasn't there. There's a lot of kind of lifting and moving and cleaning jobs that take place on brewing days.
Nice.
Brewing so is the brewing lifter, the is
the cleaner.
I wouldn't say that. Those are your words.
That was me. That was me that day. So.
But brewing is like 90% cleaning things, sure. Right? And moving heavy things.
Yep.
And so having somebody there who is able to help with some of those jobs or even take over some of those jobs allows me to concentrate on sort of the more technical aspects of the brew day. So that is very helpful, yeah.
Are those some of your favorite parts? What are some of your favorite parts of the brew?
I love when we first mix the crushed grains with the hot water and you get the big hit of grain smell. Yeah. Right, suddenly the brew house smells like wort,
yeah.
Like crushed grain,
absolutely.
And that's fantastic. And you mix them together, we heat them up a bit, gets to about 67, and you start seeing the bubbles, the enzymes transforming the starch into sugar, and you can start to smell the sweetness in the wort.
Yeah,
that's always pretty fun.
You know what? I actually really agree with you. While I'm not a brewer myself and I haven't brewed professionally in any format, I was a home brewer, but that's actually not where I really connected with that smell of the wort. Funny enough, I used to work for Petco, which is a very, very large pet chain. I worked at their home office in San Diego, and when you'd come out from work at the end of the day, it was located in an area of San Diego called Mira Mesa, which if anybody knows, there are several craft beer breweries, Alesmith, Green Flash, Ballast Point, just to name a few, all around that area, McKellar SD, you know, not at that time, but so you would walk out sometimes in the parking lot and you would actually smell wort. Like, so you just carried in the air through, you know, whatever, etc. But it was so fucking cool. You know, and that smell was kind of nostalgic for me. So when I go into a brewery or have a chance to work with somebody, I would probably say that might be my favorite part as well.
Just the organoleptic experience, Jesus, of being Christ. In the brewery. There are so many unique smells in there, right? The smell of the grain, the smell of the wort, the smell of the hops. When the hops first hit the hot wort in the kettle,
yeah.
And they release a whole bunch of aromas.
Yeah.
Amazing. That's a fantastic smell. I even like definitely. The smell of the parasitic acid that we use to sanitize the tanks. Not everyone likes that smell, but I love it.
Yeah.
I like the smell of Vortex in the morning.
Are we referencing your farts? I'm not sure what parasitic acid
is a chemical we use. Excuse me. Frog in my throat. Parasitic acid is a chemical that we use to sterilize the tanks. So it smells a little bit like vinegar, which is acetic acid, right? But a little bit different as well.
Got it.
But for me, that smells like a brewery, and that's a happy place to be. So I like the smell of parasitic acid.
It feels very like clear, like this is the brewery smell, this and this, for example.
Yes, the melange of parasitic acid and malt and hops and fermentation going on. It's all in there, and you can smell everything. You love that melange.
So great. How do you come up with creative beer names, dude?
That's one of my favorite parts of the process.
You have some pretty good ones.
It's the really creative part of the process, right? That's the main reason I started this brewery was an opportunity to come up with silly names for beers. I tell you, sometimes they just absolutely flow out. And sometimes the name even comes before the beer.
Okay.
And like we're like, okay, write that down. That name is so good, we have to make a beer and call it that.
Yeah.
Mount Crushmore was one of those.
That's
that came out of a riffing session. And I have since looked it up and there are a few other breweries that have used that. But I have to say, they're making like pilsners and calling them Mount Crushmore. No, man. It's a crushable mountain IPA.
Right.
That was one that just came out very easily. And sometimes they do. Sometimes you have the name immediately. You know, it rolls off the tongue, or it'll come before the beer, or it's just so self-evident that you don't even have to discuss it. Tama Mono Ale was another one like that.
Oh.
Our single hop beer, right?
Yeah.
Other times, I will say, it is an absolute struggle. Like, we will be thinking for a month or more
really?
What we're going to call this beer. I think the beer that we made together, the Midnight Surfer, wasn't that long, but it was a bit of a process, wasn't it? We workshopped a lot of names.
We workshopped a lot of names, and we kind of moved some phrases around, yep. etc. And that was really fun, you know. Having a chance to be part of that process, the naming process, I agree with you, is super fun. You know, we had the pleasure of working with West Coast Brewery on a can
right.
as well. And, you know, for them to allow us feedback on the design and the name of that portion of the beer was super fun as well. And I agree with you that I think in the brewing world, naming the beers would be one of the funnest things to do.
It's great. Yeah. It's great. Coming up with a little identity for the beers.
Right.
Right. And if people can understand that simple identity, I think it allows them to become a fan of that thing, right? That's so the milk stout we were talking about earlier, Mr. Bones.
Yeah.
It's a great little character. Like, he's a skeleton who loves extreme sports and drinking milk stouts.
I mean, we are in the land of characters, too, right?
Right,
the
yes.
Yudakara and all that stuff, too. Like, yep. it's easier for people to kind of connect to this idea of an image or a little dude or a character or something like that. I think that's really well done on your part.
This is a complete digression, but I understand this is the correct place for those. Do you know who Pipokun is?
Pipokun?
Pipokun.
I don't know.
He is the mascot for the police here in Japan.
Oh, yeah. He's like a foxish looking thing or something.
It's hard to describe exactly what he looks like.
He's the Tokyo police, right?
I think so, yeah. His head is a kind of American football shape with antennas on the ears.
Shouldn't it be like Popokun?
Well, that would be better, but I have some bad news for you. You've just learned of Pipokun's existence.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to tell you, he died last weekend.
You gotta fucking run it back. What happened?
I regret to inform you that Pipokun has died.
Shut the front door. Was he like in a raid in Shinjuku or something?
It was in Hachioji, actually.
In Hachioji?
Dangerous part of town.
That is a dangerous, mountainous part of town.
And the police were promoting themselves, I guess. They were at the station promoting police activities, and yeah. Pipokun was there doing little dances and talking about how great the cops are.
Yeah.
And it was just way too hot and humid, and so the guy in the costume collapsed from heat exhaustion.
Shut the front door.
And so a bunch of kids saw, like, Pipokun being carried away on a stretcher with a blanket over his face.
Oh, my God, dude.
Regret to inform you that Pipokun has passed away.
That's fucking great. But the guy's okay, right?
The man inside the suit is fine.
Okay, but
Pipokun, the character, the idea of Pipokun right. is no longer with us.
Well, I think I can dig and accept that and move on and, you know, continue with my life. But glad the dude's okay. Pipokun, you know, come back. He'll come back to life.
APKAB.
APKAB.
All Pipokuns are... You can fill in the rest.
Wait, are you going to make a Pipokun beer, like, in memory?
Absolutely not.
I think you should.
Do I look like a scab to you?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know what goes on in Tachikawa. It's not my neighborhood, man. Might be crazy out there. What is the Tachikawa like, actually? Because, like, you are not on the outskirts, because there's obviously places farther out that are in Tokyo. I mean, fucking Okutama is Tokyo.
Right,
and
yep.
that's, like, the woods.
That's the mountains, yeah.
Yeah, Tokyo is a fucking very big area. And I think that's the interesting thing is that people come here, obviously it's like Yamanote Central. They want to stick around kind of like the JR line and
right,
Ginza
right.
and Roppongi and all that stuff. But there's so much character in the name. I mean, Setagaya. You know, we are in a neighborhood that is not considered Central Tokyo.
Right.
However, as far as like metropolitan Tokyo, we're absolutely in the mix. So what is Tachikawa like as a neighborhood? Because you've chosen to open up your shop there, where there probably wasn't a lot of craft beer before, right?
No, and that's part of the reason why we did open there. Mm-hmm. It was opportunity. And I've lived in that area for about 9-10 years now.
Okay.
So I've been in the west of Tokyo for a while.
Ah, so you were just lazy.
partially.
Okay.
But it was, you know, that's not how you describe it to the bank. I have intimate local experience.
There we go.
And we knew that Tachikawa...
Marketing genius.
Tachikawa is the gateway to sort of Western Tokyo. So when you're talking about Okutama or Hachioji or Machida or somewhere like that, you've got to go through Tachikawa to get there.
Yeah.
And that's where all the train lines split up.
Yeah.
So I think it's fair to think of sort of the West Tama area as being its own thing.
That's cruel.
Right? We're up in the hills. We've got the rivers.
You're at a crossroads.
The cops are dead. There is no law where we live.
It's a lawless land.
Absolutely, yeah. You ever been to Hachioji? It is. Believe me, it is. And Tachikawa is kind of halfway between, yeah, the badlands of Hachioji and central Tokyo. Okay. It's 25 minutes each way, you know, on an express train.
Yeah,
and
sure,
it's the gateway to that western area of Tokyo, which is still part of Tokyo, but is very different from Shinjuku or Ginza or Shibuya. You know?
Right. And probably very different from, like, Setagaya, you know?
Very different, yeah. It's nice to have quite a lot of greenery around there. And I think Tachikawa, in the 10 years that I've lived there, has changed a lot as well. It's less seedy than it used to be.
I love seedy, though.
It is good. It's not that good for raising a young family.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
We've got an IKEA now. We've got a Lalaport. We've got a... an IMAX cinema. So, you know, there's just about everything you could want is
IKEA.
Here. We've got an IKEA, yeah.
Okay.
But I think the whole of Tokyo is gradually moving west. That's a pet theory of mine, right?
Well, I think they have to.
Right, you can't go east. That's the ocean.
We're all full up.
Right.
You know, there's no more room at the end.
So west is where the space is, and west is where the development is going to go.
Yeah.
So if you look at Tachikawa 20 years ago and Tachikawa now, they're very different. And that's part of the reason why we're out there. It's because, like, if we buy land out here, if we exist out here, the development will come to us rather than us having to spend over the odds for central Tokyo.
They will come.
Exactly. That's right. And before we opened, there was a little bit of craft beer in Tachikawa, but there were certainly no breweries.
No. I mean, again, you know, like this, it's really difficult to talk about a neighborhood that I don't have a lot of experience in, one, because I'm not versed in the area, and two, like, there's zero expertise behind, like, my opinions. However, like everybody.
However.
I've got them.
Yep.
But, you know, spending a little bit of time coming to visit you guys a couple times, going out for the brew day and the podcast and stuff, I like the neighborhood, and I think that, like you, you can immediately see that there's potential to build something there.
Definitely, yeah.
And I think we kind of had the same idea here. You know, we had opportunities to be in more populated neighborhoods that,
right.
To be really honest, financially would have been probably what would have had a quicker impact on us. And we kind of went through more, not difficult route, but maybe the less traveled road in that sense, because we wanted to really build a sense of community. And I think we've been lucky enough in this first year to do that. And when I've been in your shop, even though it's been a handful of times, it does seem like you're a local establishment. You've got local people coming and enjoying it. And of course, you've got people from all over Tokyo coming to see you. But to build a spot where the community can come and share, like, beer, that's fucking rad.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So you're traveling the different roads. Maybe the mountain road, the steep road. You might even call it the Sakamichi.
This motherfucker right here. Stop promoting your shit, man. This is my podcast.
Open every day from 12.
All right. Speaking of podcasts, I do have a couple more questions before I let you go today. I know you've got a hard out. What do you have? Like a painting? There's a nude.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Kate Winslet is in town, and she's insisted that she's going to paint me. You know,
yeah.
We've had a long-standing agreement.
I don't doubt it. So.
It's been 94 years.
So let me ask you about podcasts, because this is episode 10, by the way.
Congratulations.
This is a thank you.
The big 1-0.
This is a hallmark for me. August was a bit of a month off. Like you, you know, summer is busy for craft beer bars in general. But I want to know, what's the most unexpected guest you've had on a podcast? And with 100 of them, there's probably been a couple.
We've had a few, yeah. The journalist Phoebe Amoroso appeared on our podcast. She was a lot of fun. I didn't know her at all, but I think we followed her on Facebook, and she put a post up on one day saying she'd been out for a day and she'd had some nice drinks, and she posted the pictures of the drinks, and we commented underneath, "Did you have a beer as well?"
Yeah.
And she replied saying, "No, I'm sorry, I don't actually like beer." And so I got in touch to say,
challenge accepted.
Why don't you come on the podcast and we'll see if we can change your mind?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, we didn't. She still doesn't like beer. But we did find one beer that she did like, which was one of those barrel-aged imperial nonsense things that she really enjoyed.
There you go.
And, you know, that's part of the reason why we do the podcast, is to make those unusual friends, those unusual connections, you know? And it's fun to talk to people from completely different walks of life who are still doing something in Tokyo here, doing something interesting in Tokyo.
I mean, 100%, you know, the expat community here in I don't know. It's so interesting to me that there's people here for so many different reasons, so many different backgrounds. The unifying thing, you know, just to simplify it from my point of view, is that you all speak English and you have like a bit of a Western culture background, but we're all here for different reasons. So to kind of connect and see everybody's story of how they ended up here is always fascinating to me. And I'm a big believer in everybody has a story. Even if you think like you're not interesting, and I'm not talking about just expats, but every person has a story. I'm always really keen to find out what it is. And that's part of the reason why I started this podcast is, of course, you want to promote the bar, but realistically, like, I don't know how much impact the podcast has. I think really it's more for us and enjoyment and to get a chance to talk to people that we like and to spend more time with them and get to know them a little bit better and have some beers together. But finding out a person's story has always been something really fun for me to do.
That is always really interesting. And it's fascinating to hear other people's points of views, especially if they're different from your own.
Yeah.
But it's also... I don't know how much
they're
of an impact.
They're wrong most of the time, but I do want to hear them.
It's more interesting when they're wrong, usually.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's a way of keeping people engaged, right? Mm. We started doing the podcast right in the early days of COVID, when we had to be open and close and open and close all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And if our customers can't come into the bar, I was thinking, well, how else can we remind them that we're here and that hopefully we'll be back? And so we'd still be posting on social media every day, even if it was just a funny picture that I'd found walking around Tachikawa. Nice. You know, let's post something. Let's remind people that we're here.
Yeah.
Why do we start a podcast? We've got this space. Let's just record something and put it out there and try and keep people engaged in that way.
Mm.
And it has been a fun way of perhaps appearing to be a bigger deal than we really are.
No, I really respect what you guys have done with the podcast. Even if you're taking a hiatus, like the reality is that you have a business and that you're trying to take care of, and customers that you're trying to take care of. The podcast is in addition to that.
Right.
So I think everybody understands. With 100 episodes, it's not like you guys are a bunch of slouches. You know what I mean? Like 10 episodes, and I'm like, fucking A, this is a lot of work. Not what I had signed up for originally. I was like, well, just hang out, drink beer, and record shit. But I think it's fun. And I think that, you know, for some people and some friends, and, you know, they said that they listen. It's kind of nice to hear just people chat it up, talk about daily life, and... For some of my friends, it's really great because they're like, it kind of feels like hanging out with you.
Right.
And I love the idea that somebody is listening to us have a conversation somewhere halfway across the world and feeling like, you know what, I could totally be in that conversation with them or having a good time with them, you know. So I think you did a really great thing during COVID and just gave people another outlet. So get your shit together and get back on the podcast train, because 100 episodes in, there's definitely people who look up to what you've been doing.
Let's raise a glass for 100 more. You must get listener statistics for the people who listen to this podcast. Do you have listeners in any unusual locations?
There has been a couple countries in Asia that I didn't think people would be like. There were, like, Thailand, Korea, a couple places like that. There were some places in Europe. It might be based on the guest. You know, there's been a variety of different guests, and I don't know where, you know, what their connections are, but anytime you tag somebody, you can't imagine where their tentacles reach, you know, quote unquote. And of course, like, I have friends obviously back home, overseas, in different places, family, etc. So it's kind of nice, you know, to know that there are people listening to you, even if you think maybe the episode's not whatever impactful. The reality is that if you have 47 people downloaded an episode, and I'm sure you know and think the same thing, is that it's like having 47 people in a room.
Right.
And speaking to 47 people. That's a big deal. You know, connecting like with 47 people or trying to share something with 47 people is something else. There's been guests that have got us far higher numbers for downloads. I don't really care about that. I think it's just really cool to put something out there and to have the time to like talk to you and get to know you a little bit more and have anybody who wants to be part of that experience be part of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it is fun to sit down and have a conversation. You know, that was part of the reason why Dan and I did it. That's another reason why Dan and I did it, is we found that it was kind of an excuse to just sit and have a beer together.
Absolutely.
As well, you know?
Absolutely. And take a break almost, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Or maybe even the opposite, to force yourself to do it, right? Because at the end of the day, you're tired, you just want to go home. But why don't we hang out? Let's give ourselves a reason to hang out
Damn
and
sure.
have a beer instead.
Damn sure I want to go home. So before I let you go home, I do have one more question about podcasting. If you could interview anyone living,
okay,
who would it be and why?
Interesting question. Let me give this some thought.
Don't worry, guys. I'm going to edit all this shit out. He's just sitting there twiddling his thumbs.
I'm not twiddling my thumbs. I mean, the obvious answer is William Shatner.
The Shat.
Absolutely.
All right. What? Why?
I think he has a lot more depth to him.
I love how you said the obvious answer.
Everyone was thinking it. I'm just voicing the thoughts of the room. I think he has a lot more depth to him than the popular imagination would hold. Did you ever see the footage of him when he came back from that? Was it Blue Origins? Is that what it's called? The Jeff Bezos penis rocket. They sent Shatner up into space.
Yeah, okay.
And he came back down and he got out of the capsule and he was giving a very emotional and heartfelt speech about what it felt like to look down on the Earth and all this life that exists down there, whilst all around him in space was nothing but death. Right? That's all space is. And he almost looked on the edge of tears, and then Jeff Bezos interrupted him by spraying him a bottle of champagne all over him.
Good for Jeff Bezos.
Wait, enough from you, nerd.
I can see he's got, I mean, obviously playing that role for a long time and having that experience and being kind of put up on a pedestal as like this adventurer, and then going out and doing that is a really kind of cool tie-in. However, I remember him more for that commercial he did on the radio where somebody told him to be more something or like have more feeling and
right.
He just lost his shit on them.
I don't remember that at all.
Oh my God, it's amazing. So he does this like radio commercial and then the guy, I don't know what the fuck he says, like something be more authentic or be more excited or something like that. And he's like, you have to be more excited. And he just starts fucking going off. We're going to watch it together after this.
Yeah. Okay, I will check that out. My other answer, because I know you wanted me to name two people, is David Waingrow, the British archaeologist. He and a sociologist called David Graeber, who has unfortunately died. He would have been my choice, but he unfortunately died recently. Wrote.
I'm so sorry for that and his family. Doesn't count though, he's dead.
Okay, so that's why I'm going to choose his writing partner, David Waingrow. And they wrote a book together called The Dawn of Everything, A New History of Humanity, which this to listeners of, regular listeners of Sakamichi Nights, this may appear familiar. I'm just going to name the thing that I have been doing recently. I've been reading that book recently, and it's really interesting.
Yeah.
It takes another look at why, I'm going to completely butcher this, but the general idea is that humans went from being hunter-gatherers to farmers and then continued on to make society as it is at the moment.
Okay.
And they dispute that. They say
they dispute that.
Yeah, it actually, people may have chosen to go back to being hunter-gatherers, or they may have been hunter-gatherers part of the year and farmers the other part of the year. And a lot of the assumptions that we make about human nature and the way that the world is currently organized are sort of based on faulty premises. It's quite an interesting book.
Okay. Interesting. So, that definitely sounds interesting. Now you have a bit of a background in anthropology, so it's okay. Definitely up my alley.
Check it out. It's called The Dawn of Everything. A New History of Humanity.
I'm reading some pretty heavy books right now, so...
It's pretty heavy. It's several hundred pages.
I mean, I'm currently about three quarters. Yeah. Do you know the book called The Chamber of Secrets?
I believe that is by a young author called Harry Potter.
So I'm about three quarters of the way through that. If I can get through that before the end of this extended summer, then I'll take a look, see if I can find that book as well.
Give it a go. And part of the reason I bring him up is because I do think that making beer plays a part in the story of humanity, right? And I don't want to, you know, big myself up here too much, but there is a certain element of that when you're working in the brewery and you're thinking, this is a job that humans have done for 5,000 years, 6,000 years.
Are we talking about the Egyptians and how they... Yeah,
yeah.
You've seen that documentary, I'm sure, How Beer Changed the World or Saved the World.
Beer and bread are basically the same thing, just right. The proportions are slightly different.
Right.
And so we're doing an activity here that humans have been doing for thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah.
The way that we're doing it, I'm sure it would look very different, but the basic process is essentially the same. And it's the same with, you know, making bread or preparing food for your family.
Yes.
It's an interesting cultural touchstone to be a part of.
On that note, please make sure you guys check out the YouTube How Beer Saved the World movie. If you haven't watched that little animated thing, it's really great. Dude, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for taking the time. I'm going to edit this and probably post it by at least like early December.
Excellent.
At the very latest. It is now September, what is it, 18th, 19th?
I believe it's the 20th today.
Jesus Christ, I'm way behind. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for being a beer friend forever. Anything you want to say to the people before we go about Sakamichi or yourself?
Sakamichi Brewing, we're in Tachikawa, Tokyo. We are open every day from 12. We do 12 taps of craft beer, most of it made on the premises in Tachikawa. We have a few guest taps as well. You can bring in any food you want. If you can't make it all the way out to us, then please do stop by Chelas in lovely Oyamadai. I heartily recommend both the tacos and the beer. That was a double plug.
I love that. And we do have Sakamichi beer on tap from time to time. Particularly, we have a keg right now that Matthew's pressured me to put on as quickly as possible, and it is going on soon. So if somehow this releases within the next week or so, please come and try their mango dialectic. We've all learned what dialectic means. And it is not a disease related to diabetes. So thank you for clearing that up.
No, and thank you for agreeing to host the launch party for that beer and to play this episode live through the speakers here on constant loop through that day. I think a lot of people are really going to enjoy that event.
So again, thank you so much for listening, guys. And we'll see you on the next episode of Beer Friends Forever.
Thank you.
Cheers.